Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Trampoline Hall podcast. If you are a first-time listener, I welcome you. I simply do not welcome you back. I am your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall is a lecture series that takes place in a bar, usually in Toronto, sometimes in other cities. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects, with the one restriction being that they cannot lecture on subjects on which they are professionally expert. It cannot be their job to know the thing. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. Me, Misha Globerman, your host. This is the Trampoline Hall podcast. And what we do here is, for each episode of the podcast, we go back in time. I mean, we don't actually go back in time. We open up a file on our hard drive. But we go back in time and choose a lecturer from the past, and we bring that forward in time to you, and then you get to enjoy it at whatever time you like, or not enjoy it too. Feel free to listen to the podcast and just not like it at all. That's totally your prerogative. Anyhow, the point is, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be a lecture. There's going to be a Q&A. It's going to be amazing. If you like the podcast, you might also like the show, the live Trampoline Hall show. Now, usually we do this in a bar in Toronto, and maybe you're thinking, well, I can't get to Toronto. I can't even go to a bar because there's a pandemic, because maybe there's still a pandemic while you're listening to this. There sure is while we record it. Well, we've solved that problem, not the pandemic, but the other problem, which is that we do Trampoline Hall online. You can come, you can check it out, get on our email list, go to the Trampoline Hall website, sign up for our email list. We'll let you know when the shows are. They're online. They're actually kind of cool for online events, I think. I think we're doing a good job of them. And by the way, you might be wondering, does this contain mature language? The answer is it may. But now is not the time for that. Now is the time for this, for this episode's lecture. The topic is Horror for Children and the Era of Don Bluth Aesthetics. And the lecturer is Vida Beyer.
So what I'm presenting is kind of a research project that I've just started and haven't done the most fact-based research. It's kind of, I have some thoughts and some things to present to you. So what I'm talking about is a period of cinema that I have not entirely arbitrarily decided starts at about 1980 and ends at about 2001. And when I was initially sort of trying to define the sensibility that I'm talking about, I thought about the film creator Don Bluth. And I realized through watching some Don Bluth that I'm not entirely talking about actual Don Bluth, but sort of what Don Bluth kind of represented. So there was a period in time, a little bit, like, the internet tells me a lot of different things. And one of the things that is kind of controversial is that there's this period in Disney's film history that's sometimes called the Dark Age of Disney, or the Bronze Age for people who like it and don't want to feel bad about it. Where Walt Disney died, and then Disney didn't really know how to make money. Some people say that it happened before Walt Disney died, and when they started using xerography, which is a particular animation technology that a lot of people felt made their movies look cheaper. I feel like this period sort of starts midway through Disney's Bronze Age. I don't really know why. I feel like the most compelling reason I've received has almost been astrological, which is that Pluto was in Scorpio during a chunk of this time. Seems legit, to be honest. But films that were made for children developed this particular kind of dark bent. And I understand early Disney has some dark stuff. There's always been some dark stuff, but I think that things took on a really particular kind of sensibility that's hard to articulate, that kind of was born out of the non-Disney children's movie and sort of the birth of that as a viable thing and non-Disney, non-Warner Brothers specific children's entertainment. And it had something to do with the advent of VHS and home entertainment, and also that Disney was not really making money. So while Disney was not making money, this guy sort of broke away from Disney named Don Bluth, and he started to produce his own movies. And his first movie, which is the thing that really sort of, I feel like, defines this sensibility for me, is The Secret of Nim. And The Secret of Nim is, for those of you who have not seen it, a movie that was made in 1982, and it's about a mother, single mother, who's a mouse, who has to rescue her family because her young son is very ill, and humans are going to come plow the field, and they're not going to be able to get out of the field because she can't move her son into the cold because her son has pneumonia and will die. It's kind of the anti-Disney movie in that it has a mom that's alive, but she's also the main character, and it's all about her. There are children in it. We don't care about them. They're like in a brick for most of the movie. Like, doesn't matter. It's all about mom, and it's all about her learning to be brave, which is pretty amazing. A lot of kids were pretty traumatized by it because there's a very scary owl who eats bugs mid-conversation and does not give a fuck. But I highly recommend checking it out if you did not check it out at the time, or if you did check it out at the time and were too scared, it's, again, worth a revisit. It's got mice, it's got science, it's got magic. They coexist together in this movie. Very cool, very inventive. Don Bluth, through the rest of his career, made a lot of other movies. Some people care about them. I don't really. I think that The Land Before Time is kind of has some cool spiritual stuff. And again, I really like the spiritual kinds of themes he brings into kids' movies. Like All Dogs Go to Heaven is very philosophical. And I guess the main thing that I want to talk about overall is that I think that it's good to bring themes that are complicated into children's entertainment and to make children feel maybe kind of bad and uncomfortable while watching a movie. I think it's good to be challenged, and I think that I'm interested in movies that you can watch as a child and then revisit and be able to glean new meaning from over time. I was born in 1988. But I had no friends, and I was not a child who read a lot of books. Most people I know with no friends read books. I just was the second most frequent renter at Blockbuster. I know this because they told me. But yeah, so I watched a lot of movies that were staggered before I was born, just because I was watching almost every children's movie available to me through the library, Rogers, Blockbuster, and independent video stores, and variety stores, because you used to be able to get videos at variety stores. So I feel really touched by this particular thread that I think cinematically kind of is grounded in the 80s, and then when sort of children's cable became a thing in the 90s, moved a little bit towards television. Other movies that I kind of revisited as part of my research that I was really excited about include The Brave Little Toaster. Again, very, very, very worthy of a rewatch. I feel like Toy Story ripped it off, but then wasn't brave enough. Brave Little Toaster, also very upsetting. Things you might remember if you watched it. In the first maybe 10 minutes, an air conditioner commits suicide. So that's pretty real. But things that I really like about the Brave Little Toaster is in a lot of children's movies, things die and come back. In The Brave Little Toaster, a lot of things die and don't come back, which I think is a useful lesson, because that's true. It's also a really interesting movie about masculinity. All of the characters are coded as men, and the character that is... There are a bunch of different kind of loose archetypes, but the one that's the most clear archetype is Blanky, who's like a baby and a sissy and cries all the time. And everyone's like, why are you such a shitty baby? We don't like you. You're annoying. But Blanky is actually the one that they realize on their journey together that they need to be more like. It is a movie that teaches, I think, especially young boys, that maybe caring for people is really useful. Allowing yourself to open up to intimacy is really useful. And generally, taking care of people and looking out for them and nurturing them is useful in how you survive in the world and create meaningful relationships. It also has a really interesting kind of critique of built-in obsolescence. And the character who is their owner or their master, as they refer to him, he like is really invested in these objects and maintaining them and is willing to go to the dump. And like everyone's like, go get new shit for your college dorm. And he's like, no, I want the old stuff and I want to make sure it still works, which is great and beautiful and is another kind of care. I think it's great. I think that Toy Story is not as good. Into the 90s, there's sort of... move towards television. There's a lot of great stuff. I feel like there was a lot of experimental things because people didn't really know how to make money. And so you get things like Sticking Around, where there's like a kid who has a dead dog named Pepperoni that she drags around everywhere. And like nobody has the heart to tell her that Pepperoni is dead. But then sometimes when they're really mad, they're like, Pepperoni's dead. And she's like, what the fuck? Has a huge, yeah, so there's a lot of, like, great stuff. There's stuff that's, like, again, in this vein, but also, like, I don't care about it as much, like, but it's in the thread, like, Nightmare Before Christmas. There's the sadness swamp in The Neverending Story, where the horse gets so depressed that it just dies in a swamp. Strongly relatable content. There was also a lot of horror television series for children. And so there was Goosebumps, Tales from the Crypt, Are You Afraid of the Dark, and Freaky Stories. And one thread that I find really interesting that's especially true in Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark is this idea of not being believed by adults and this horror that comes from not being believed, which I think is really powerful and really real. And, like, is interesting, and I am sad that I'm not seeing as much entertainment for children that's willing to tap into that kind of really scary thing, because it's real, and it's okay to feel that. And then on the flip side of it, I really like the movie Matilda and, like, her interest in agency, believing in herself, and also rejecting her family of origin, which is extremely rare in a children's movie. She makes her own family, and there's no big reveal where it's like, oh, she was your real mom the whole time. It's like, no, she's not your real mom. Your real mom is not really for you. Maybe this other person is a cooler mom and a cooler support system for you. I guess the thing that I sort of see, there's always a lot of threads going on at once at any given time, and I don't want to negate those other threads. But I feel like there was a period in time where a lot of entertainment for children became for children and adults by having things that were more complex themes or having, you know, higher stakes drama in the narrative. And then there was sort of a shift that kind of happened over time that I feel like is interesting to me on a number of levels, but it's sort of... things became for kids and parents by being hyper-referential to pop culture instead. of being something that is like maybe more difficult and high risk. And I sort of see this epitomized in, and like sort of the shift over it to it in Shrek, which was released in 2001. And obviously there are things that sort of laid the groundwork for a sensibility like Shrek. Like The Simpsons was very referential. Who Framed Roger Rabbit also had this like meeting of different worlds, including Disney and Warner Brothers and all these different things. And even the genie in Aladdin is this character who like spits out various pop culture references throughout the movie that like are going to be not necessarily for the children watching it. And this shift is sort of associated with another split from Disney, which is on a more producer level, which is this guy, Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was sort of involved in the Disney Renaissance, which is the thing that I lived through. I was like in the primo Disney Renaissance age because it kind of ran from 1989 to 1999. That's when they made a bunch of movies that made a lot of money, including The Little Mermaid and Aladdin and all of that stuff, which I'm less interested in. But Jeffrey Katzenberg was at Disney at that time and then left Disney, and it was quite full of animosity. And then he was somebody who really had his hands in making Shrek, which is a very, I feel like it's a very mean movie. And I'm really interested in satire as a tool to critique things, but I don't really feel like Shrek really does that. It's a movie that feels very empty and just a lot of references to stuff. And I think that what I've seen sort of post-Disney, a lot of DreamWorks films in particular, but even Disney movies, it's like the ultimate takeaway if you're a kid and you watch it when you're a kid, there's jokes for you, and then you return and you find out that something was a dick joke. And that's like it. And I feel like that's such a cynical way to bring older people and children together. And it's a cynical and like kind of lazy way to write stories. It's just not, I don't think it's that exciting. I guess there are also like really good kids movies being made now too. I haven't seen as many of them because I haven't been caring for children that much in this moment, not doing a lot of babysitting. But again, I have seen a lot of darkness kind of neutered out of children's movies. And it might be because of MPAA readings or other things like that. I'm not totally sure. Again, early research project. But I guess my main thing is that I think it's valuable and I would like to see more of it again. That's it.
Vida Beyer, ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Are there any questions? Yes, there's one there, yes.
Hi, Eula.
What is the darkest children's movie you've ever seen?
What is the darkest children's movie you've ever seen, ever?
All the way through?
Oh yeah, that is the qualifying question I really want to know.
Probably Watership Down. Like that's some violent stuff. Like I would say the reason why I didn't bring that one up is I feel like that one kind of almost crossed the threshold and it's like harder to watch because the narrative is just like, it's getting at you at every turn. And like, it's an option, but would I say it's like, I think my favorite taste of darkness? Perhaps not. Favorite? I really, again, Dark Crystal and Secret of Nim really high up there. Dark Crystal was the first movie where I saw the main character die, basically. And like, I walked away from it and I was like, I love this movie. It was like, that was a wild ride. Interesting. Prepared me to watch other things.
How old were you?
Probably like 8, 9.
And you were like, yes, finally.
And I was like, that's something to think about. I was like, whoa, this is very scary. Whoa, okay. And like, came around to it eventually. I think maybe even my initial response was like, ah, this is sad. What? All that for death? But
it's like a good title for anything.
Yeah.
All that for death? It just describes like,
yeah,
pretty much any experience.
Yeah.
When you were asked what was your favorite, what's the darkest movie you said, and the first thing you said was all the way through, and I was like, what? Was there a movie that's even darker, but you only like got halfway through it or something?
Well, there are ones that I've seen like clips of that are darker than Watership Down, but again, I don't know if they're like for children exactly. It's like they kind of theoretically are, but I don't think they were.
What's an example of one that you think is not for children but is like dark but might be for?
There was this one that I was. When I was doing research for this, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a movie that's not The Big Snit, but is also about an older couple who survive an atomic blast and like are dying slowly. But it was like more intense. It wasn't like kooky like The Big Snit.
Right, so
it
just
was
like a realistic movie about a couple
apparently
surviving
it was
an atomic blast.
For children.
Supposedly. Really?
Yeah.
Does anyone know anything about this movie?
I can't remember what it was called, sorry.
All right, there we go. So that would be one that might be darker, but you didn't watch it.
I didn't watch it.
Because you were like, that's too dark
even
for grown-ups?
I was just like, maybe I don't want to watch this today. Maybe I'll watch it later. Probably wouldn't have gotten through it as a young child person.
Okay. All right, so there we go. Whoa, so many hands. Let's go over there. Yes, you, sir.
I want to ask you about a million different things, but just to keep it to one in the modern, have you seen Inside Out?
And I loved Inside Out.
From the 90s.
So the question is, have you seen Inside Out? And speaking of that, what did you think of Animaniacs?
I mean, I don't love the end of Inside Out, but like up until the end, I loved it so much, and I did cry, and I'm not a movie crier at all. Animaniacs, like, it had a quality, but as a kid, I actually like didn't really give a hoot about Animaniacs.
It doesn't have that. Doesn't like have a super deep vein of
darkness
in it.
But I totally respect people's love of Animaniacs. Yes.
Right, abstractly.
Yeah.
Abstract respect. Okay, yeah. Sure. Okay, that's yes, all the way in the back. Yes, back there, yeah.
Do you feel like Adventure Time ever gets into that territory?
What about Adventure Time? Dark enough for you?
Adventure Time, I have not gone all the way through. It's like, this is just a personal thing. This is not like a thing where I'm like, I gotta see more or less of this. I just like, Adventure Time is like kooky for me in a way that like, it's fine, I'm glad it exists, but it's not for me.
I'm really hoping the entire Q&A will be like,
yeah.
Is my favorite cartoon dark enough for you? And you'll be like,
no,
your favorite cartoon is not dark enough for me.
It's
and then we'll just
dark
so
enough,
put your hands down if that's not your question.
I like all kinds of not dark.
Yeah, over there. Yes, yes.
At
my local Blockbuster, not like in
the
world.
The second most bigger renter at your local
That would be very cool, but impossible.
Well, yeah, sure, yeah. With that sort of thinking.
Yeah.
So it does leave room for a question.
You want to know?
What do you know about the most?
Do you know who was the person who rented?
I'll never know.
That's such a sad thing, because you were like, oh, I had no friends, and all I did was rent movies. And maybe there was some other kid who was even less socially adept than you
who had
even more movies.
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Now put your hands down unless you are that kid, unless you know that person.
Oh.
Okay, yes, yes, yes.
So I'm just wondering, we grew up listening to fairy tales, like the Grimm Brothers.
Yeah.
You grew up with the Grimm Brothers.
Oh,
you grew
yeah.
Up in
right, listen
yeah.
to them at night.
Yes.
Kids. And
yeah.
Do you think the modern much darker?
Right, you're like,
no.
Hey, this stuff's no darker than the Grimm
no.
Brothers. That
No.
I grew up
I don't,
with them.
I don't think it is. I think it's like, it's not about the darkness even itself. Because obviously, again, there have always been like stories for children that are cautionary tales where it's like, if you do this, your head will get cut off. Like, that's just the way that it is. But I guess I think it's more, it's harder to pinpoint because I see it as more of a sensibility of darkness. Like, if you're watching these films, because it's a filmic experience too, like a lot of them just look darker. The way that, like, the coloring of those films, especially the animated films, just is, like, darker. Like, there's a lot of things that are interesting that are, like, textures to this experience. And I think that's why it's new. I'm intrigued by it, but I don't 100% know the parameters in which I'm defining it.
Yet. Right, so you're not making the claim that, like, this is the first time anyone ever made dark children's entertainment.
Absolutely not.
Just, like, this is, like, a special kind of dark children's entertainment that you want to talk about. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, but I somehow also think that when you're listening to stuff and you can't see it, and you're little and your mind just goes crazy.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So you're like, the stuff from my childhood is scarier and darker than the stuff from your childhood. Just to paraphrase completely fairly what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are so many different ways to be scared and feel bad. Yeah.
So every generation finds a new way to make terrify its children.
Yeah.
Great, excellent. Let's go over to you. Yes.
What are some of your favorite, like, modern examples?
What are some of your favorite contemporary examples of dark children's entertainment?
I don't really have. Like, I mean, like, in terms of kids' fare that I've watched recently and enjoyed that is, like, specifically for kids, there hasn't been a whole heck of a lot. But again, I'm not as in touch with things that have been released in the past 10 years as I was even the 10 years before that. So I have a lot of work to do. But again, just from seeing trailers, I guess that's part of the thing, not a lot grabs me. It looks like kooky, and it's referencing other stuff. And I want to, if I saw more, like, if you, anybody can send me trailers for exciting new children's fair that does not look like, go for it. I'm right. Open.
Okay, yes.
What triggered the recent research project?
What triggered this recent research project?
I don't remember. I think when I started it, there was a lot of other stuff going on. I was like, oh yeah, bookmark that. That could be the thing. And I don't know. All right. I was messed the time.
All right, so it just happened?
You
were
just happened.
Like, you were just like, this
it's
is
like,
something.
There's just, like, always a lot of stuff in my mind. Like, I'm interested in film and film criticism, but I don't know. Like, there's always a lot of, like, tabs in my mind of, like, various things that I'm interested in talking about in film that I don't necessarily see discussed that often. And I guess that was one that was, like, kind of sitting there. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We heard. Let's hear from you. Go from you. Let me come back to me. Yes.
It's certainly not horror, but The Dog Who Stopped the War. Are you familiar with that?
The Dog Who Stopped the War?
I am familiar with it as, like, an idea, but I've never seen it. Yeah.
What was your? Are you? Do you, is it? Did you feel like it might be dark enough?
It's got a really dark scene in it.
It's got a dark scene in it.
Yeah.
So maybe check it out.
Maybe it's time to check it out.
So it could be a suggestion or a question or a movie recommendation. Okay, we'll go to you. Yes, you too.
I have a recommendation and a question.
Yeah.
The recommendation is Kobo and the Two Strings. That's a contemporary movie.
Oh,
Kobo and the Two Strings.
I'm ready.
And I have the question. So if you amateur themes to a children's movie, so what makes it separate from adult movies that's like,
right, if you keep adding mature themes to a children's movie, maybe it's not a children's movie anymore? Is that the question? Like, at what point
Is
it no longer a children's movie?
That threshold is confusing. I think that, like, having some kind of element that, I don't know, I think making the choice to speak to children, even if you are making a film that is not necessarily, like, they'll get everything. I think it's just, like, kind of making that conscious choice. I think there's certain kinds of genres that lend itself to it. I'm interested in genres that allow for a certain amount of world building and world inventing, and I think that speaks to a lot of kids as well. And I guess if you go for something like that and you choose to speak to children, then it can be.
So it's just, like, an intention to have,
I think,
like,
I think
in
so. I mean, like, it helps if there are, like, children in it. But again, with something like The Secret of NIMH, it's all about the mom. So I don't know.
But there's animated animals.
There,
like,
are.
That's totally.
If you have some of the markers there and you choose to speak to children, whether the marker is a fantastical element or animated animals or something, I think it could be a children's movie. Again, if you choose to make it one.
But you'd still have to try to make it be appealing to children. I mean, you
can't
just take any movie and, like, just
no.
remake it with animated mice and
exactly. But again, like, it's just like you can choose it. It won't necessarily be good, and kids won't necessarily like it. But nothing is guaranteed. I feel like when people try and make movies where it's like, cool, we're checking off all these boxes, and then people will like it, or like it will be for this target demographic, then it's like kind of a nightmare usually.
Okay. All right. Let's go over there. Yes, over there on the side. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. When you were younger, were these also like your favorite movies, or is it just like now reflecting?
That's a good question. Did you like them as much when you were young?
Some yes, some no. I did totally. Again, I grew up during the Disney Renaissance, and I fucked heavily with that stuff. But I don't know. I liked a lot of things, and there's some things that like I get more now. But I think that's fine. I feel like that's okay. I think that making a movie that's gonna be like their kids, like, I don't know, that style of just like trying to be it just immediately satisfying is kind of boring to me. So like, I'm into things that can come to a person later. I feel like it's good to see movies like that as a young person.
Did you find that immediate satisfaction boring when you were a kid?
No.
Because that's not, yeah, because my experience of kids is that they do
like,
not tire of immediate satisfaction.
No. I watched The Little Mermaid many times in a day. Like, that's no problem.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was another question I was curious about. I want to know more about like that. When you were the second biggest renter of movies at your local Blockbuster.
Yes.
Like, what did that? How old were you? Like, how old are you talking about at that?
I can't remember when the Blockbuster moved in, but it maybe was like when I was around 4 or 5 years old. But my peak rental period, I don't actually know. It's like a fact that is also a little bit legend because I don't exactly know when this was happening. Sure. But I know that I just watched a lot of movies for a very long time.
And what was that like? Like, did you go on your own? Did you go with your parents?
I would go with my parents.
Would you, like, reach up at the counter like a...
No, I would bring the like things in a... I don't know. I just have the movies in my hands, and then they'd rent them for me.
And would you watch the same one like a bazillion times? Or would you go back and like... Bring
often.
Them?
But not always. Yeah, it depended on the movie. I don't know. Kid logic is not something that I can necessarily tap into as somebody who is not a child as myself in this moment.
And you don't recall your own kid logic in that time?
No, I just, like, there would be, like, okay, this is one that I really feel like watching again, or one that I didn't.
Do you watch a lot of movies now?
I kind of, after I dropped out of film school, I got a really sad relationship to movies. And so I still watch movies now, but I don't watch them as much because they make me feel sad.
Did film school do that to you?
Is oh,
that
yeah,
film school, like,
100%,
made you
yes.
not, it's like it's a place to go yeah. to learn how to stop enjoying movies? Is that what film
for
school
For me.
Is?
I don't think that's true for everyone, okay. But it was definitely for me, yes.
Okay. Over there, yes.
It was kind of a follow-up to that person's question. You're interested in this sort of potential to talk about complicated subject matters with children?
Yeah.
I was wondering if you think there's a space to create movies that are about sex.
What about sexy movies for children?
Sexy movies.
Is that not what you said? It's my question.
I mean,
no. So the question is like. So wait. So let just to make the question what you actually said. You're about what about movies for children, and then there was and that address the topic of sex. Like, what do you mean?
Because sex education.
Oh, because sex education is so crappy. So what about
months? Totally.
So they tend just to educate, not arouse. I misunderstand.
Yeah.
But so that can like depict sex. That can so kids can learn more about sex. Is that
okay? Safe sex or fun sex?
About safe sex or fun sex?
I think that's cool. I think I would really like to say I think this is partially why I feel so resentful about there being these like innuendo type jokes in kids movies, but also there's like no actual information that's useful. Yeah. And I think that would be really daunting, but I would love to see more people going for it and making it happen. Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like if the kids get the dick jokes, it would be so much better, right?
Yeah. Then it's not like a rude joke because it's like whispering to somebody in front of them. That's like, why would you do that? That's mean.
Right, so right now where that stuff exists,
yeah.
in fact, there's subtext between the filmmakers and the adults where they're kind of like winking at each other and they're laughing at something that the kids don't get.
Rude.
And sometimes that's something is like stuff about sexuality.
Yeah,
which is
like
the opposite of what you want to be happening.
Yeah,
so that's bad. And then this would be, and you can imagine a world where like...
I'm interested in trying. I'm always interested in trying.
Are there any
best.
Movies that are like, that talk about sexuality for kids? There must be. No, there
probably
aren't.
Some weird hippie movies that we haven't seen yet that like are like a little bit not allowed. But I haven't seen them yet.
Can ask your sexy kids question?
What was my question? I'm sure make it my question. It's my interpretation of it. It's a collaborative question we worked on together. Well, I don't even remember what it was. It was just like, what about sexy movies for kids? Is that?
I'm sure lots of movies are sexy to kids. Why do you like that? I mean, there are lots of ways kids can enjoy a movie.
Yeah, I guess lots of kids movies are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Kids are wild.
Yeah. Thank you. So yeah, there's tons. All right. Yes, back there. Yes.
So I guess my question comes from talking about regular little toaster specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was kind of curious about how much you think that like a lot of this era has to do with kind of appealing to like hyper kind of like action-packed cinema, specifically in the sense that like I mean I haven't seen little toaster in a long time, but I'm actually still haunted now that you mentioned the air conditioner scene.
Yeah, it's scary.
I remember like.
Yeah.
So you're also.
Long shot
oh yeah. Oh. Oh yeah. Yeah yeah. It's a lot.
And it is, but it's like I don't remember exactly what happens in that movie, but I remember that. Like I could probably draw like a really rough picture of that scene because it's like haunting and happening.
Honestly, so you got to go on YouTube. You got to check out the Worthless musical number again, where all the cars get crushed in the lot. It's a lot. Strong recommend. But yes, what was your question?
You guys are just hanging out. It's all right.
Like, how much do you feel like this era has passed as a result of kind of like trying to capitalize screen time for like a lot of action and a lot of like hyperactivity?
So do you think the change is that? So a question is that maybe it's there's this move toward wanting to have more action and hyperactivity.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously this goes into like you know our kids' attention span nowadays.
Yeah.
Because kids nowadays have short attention spans.
The kids, yeah.
Unlike in the 90s, 80s, 70s,
no,
60s,
they could,
and 50s.
You could make them sit down
when they were all
forever.
Reading Russian novels.
Yeah.
teaching themselves math for fun.
I don't know. I read some Redwalls for a while. Those books are long, man.
Right.
They're
so do you think I mean maybe that is. Do you think that is
maybe.
Like part of the change is like making things more action-packed or more
I guess I don't know. I feel like there's just like there is a lot going on, but I feel like you could definitely stylize things in a kind of hyper way and still maybe not make it so banal.
Right, it could still be fast
yeah.
and dark.
It could yeah, be like or not necessarily dark, but just like interesting. I guess the darkness is what took me to the place, but I'm interested in interesting.
Right, so it's not darkness for and of itself. It's just like ways for things to be complicated, ways for them to be interesting. And
about
by interesting,
stuff.
You mean interesting. Does that mean interesting to grown-ups necessarily, or?
I don't know. I think just, I don't know. I like when people try out stuff and it doesn't work. Also, I'm interested in movies that are not necessarily satisfying or good. I don't know. I just like, I'm interested in a variety of feeling. And maybe that's what interests me, but I don't know. I don't know.
Do you think, when you watch the movies, did you watch them with your parents or on your own or both?
Both.
So I wonder if part of it, too, is like the anxiety that parents feel. Like when you're a parent and you're giving your kid an experience, like I think as a parent, you kind of just like, or a lot of parents, like you want to see them just be happy. And if you plop them down in front of a movie and they're like, they seem bummed out or sad, I can see like, and even if as a kid you're like, oh, I'm enjoying being bummed out and sad by this, I can see a lot of parents being like, oh, like I have to remedy that. I have to fix that. Like this desire to fix that quickly. And I wonder if it matters whether the kids are watching things alone or with parents or.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, my parents have a very rogue style of deciding what's appropriate for children. This is bad because my parents are here. So like I, they're like roasted. Yeah, like my parents. I feel like I have to share this anecdote just because I'm here. But my parents let my brother watch a Pedro Almodovar movie when he was 7 years old. It's a movie called All About My Mother, and there's like sex work and a lot of emotions. So that's that sort of vibe.
All right. So
they're more free to let a child see some things that maybe some parents wouldn't. And like both styles are legit. I feel like my brother who saw that movie is a fine and well adjusted adult.
Are you a proper parent? Is that?
No, I don't. I've never seen her.
You've never seen her.
Now I'm gonna get roasted.
Who is that? Is that?
That is my mother.
The woman who said. Right. So there's a difference of opinion about the relationship between them.
Yeah.
She says she's her mother. This woman says they've never met.
Let's Do you have
see,
a question?
Let's see how
you just
this
have
story
a
plays out. All
What's
right.
This?
Yes. You.
Yes,
ma'am.
I'm breaking all the rules here.
Whoa.
Maybe there was a person at Blockbuster that the Blockbuster clerk said to your mom, after your family being the second highest watcher, the Blockbuster clerk, there was an older man who watched more.
Oh, okay. Thank goodness.
There was, it was an older man? Was the person who watched more than your entire family?
Leaked.
Okay.
But I have a legit question.
Okay, so legit question.
What I would like to hear about is where you think Miyazaki fits into.
Where do you think Miyazaki fits into all this?
You know, I love it. But I feel like for me, because he is producing movies initially for not a Western context, and like I'm from a Western context, like I'm enjoying those movies, but like he's not necessarily producing them for people who are growing up in the same context as me. And those movies are really good. But I also feel like he was like at his peak in terms of the things he was producing around this era that I'm talking about. Like they were staggered later in their release dates in North America in English dubs, but a lot of them were kind of from this era too. So it's interesting. And he does do cool, interesting stuff for kids and also adult people. So yeah.
Are you all right? Okay. Does that answer your question? All right. Is that sufficiently that you're willing to acknowledge your relationship to the speaker, or are you still on the fence about that? All right. You can retain your anonymity. Anything else you would like to know? Yes, over there. Yes.
Have you seen The Last Unicorn?
Have you seen The Last Unicorn?
Have I seen The Last Unicorn? Yeah, for sure. All this week I've had the Now That I'm a Woman song stuck in my head, and it's a terrible song. I highly recommend looking into it if you want to feel pain. But yeah, the... The Last Unicorn is definitely like within the genre. Is it my favorite? No, but like also it has some worthwhile stuff, for sure.
So I kind of want to know more about that. You talked about the horror of not being believed as like a thing in these movies that felt like compelling to you.
Well, specifically, I guess in the horror, like the capital H horror, like children's television stuff. I don't know. It's like it's weird because it's like the thing in Goosebumps every time, like in the both the books and the TV series. It's like the only the kid can see, and they're like, but mom. There's a mummy, and they're like, don't see it. Don't see that for you.
And what is it about that? Is there something about that that feels like exciting to you, or that feels like
it feels really resonant? I feel like in life, as an adult and as a child, like that's such a scary thing. But when you're a kid, you have even less agency to be able to call bullshit on stuff because everyone's like, you are a literal child.
Right.
So I guess I don't know. I feel like even though it's in this like schlocky, like very poor quality, like horror, bad effects way, it's like it's real too. And I guess, I don't know. I feel really affected by that now in this moment.
Right. And that feels like this powerful.
Yeah. There's something there. Like that's.
Do you feel that's something people don't do as much anymore?
I guess I just like, I haven't heard of children's, television that is like horror anthology children's television anymore. Like I don't know
at
if
all.
That exists
at all. So you think people have just moved away from
it? I guess like people lost their appetite for it, and so it just doesn't exist. But like it had its moment, and I really want to know why, but I still don't know why.
There's no new one.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. When you talk about like that schlockiness, one thing that I think about too, that I wonder about too, is like there's a lot of stuff we can look at now as adults and be like, that's really schlocky, or that storyline's like ridiculous, or that animation's terrible.
Yeah.
But I think like when you're a kid, I don't know that you care. Like, do you think kids?
No.
No, because when I look back, I'm
sometimes
like,
they do, sometimes they don't. But like, I don't think that's like how they think of it. It's like, oh, this is good, or oh, this sucks.
Yeah.
That's
but
it.
Like so many of the things, I know there's so many of the things that I liked when I was a kid. If I go back and look at them, like they were terrible, but that didn't.
Yeah.
Bother me. Like, that wasn't like a.
I'm not saying it can't exist. I don't think that, like, things that are kind of. That are, like, kind of not the most rich or complex shouldn't exist. But I do think it's good to, again, have variety and have different stuff.
Cool. Okay. All right. Yes, over there. Yes. Will talking to children be part of your research project?
I think so. Yeah, I'm ready to meet some kids.
Do you feel? I could arrange some introductions if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel the same way when you talk to kids? I'm asking. Do you similarly feel that there is a place, like, is there an analogous way about how you relate to children in real life that's analogous to how you think about cinema for children? Like, do you think, like, I don't know, do you talk about death to kids or whatever? Or do you,
I have never tried, I guess it's, like, come up, I guess, I don't know, when I hang out with a kid, it's, like, usually an organic thing where I'm, like, looking after a kid, we talk about whatever. Like, there's things that I wouldn't talk about with a kid, but I don't know. I'm just myself with people, usually, if I'm not being paid to work a customer service job, I'm just me. And even then, I'm still myself.
But you don't, so do you feel like, yeah. Are you aware when you interact with children that, like, is there a way that you see other people interact with children that you try not to bring to your own interactions? Like, do you feel that other people are, like, saccharine-y with kids or something like that, or?
I don't know. I guess I don't really see that much. I just don't want to be an asshole to kids just because I don't want to be an asshole to people.
Right.
I don't know. They're people.
So they claim.
So they say.
Anything else? Any other questions people have? Yes, all the way in the back of the room. Yes.
Why do you think adults
patronize
kids?
Why do
you
think what?
Why do adults patronize kids?
Because they're scared, I think, mostly.
Because adults are scared?
Yeah.
Like of what?
And also people like to feel superior generally. Kids, adults, I don't know.
What do
people
you think?
Are fuckers.
What?
I like them. I don't want to be mean to them, but they're also fuckers.
What are adults scared of?
I don't know. I think they're afraid of, like, doing damage or, like, that the kids don't get stuff. Or, like, I don't know. Maybe different things for different people. But it seems like a scared person behavior to me.
So, like, scared of hurting? Scared of...
I think for different things for different people. Right. I don't know. I don't really get it, though, personally.
Well, let's wrap it up, ladies
cool,
and gentlemen.
Great.
Vida Beyer, ladies and gentlemen.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty. It is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Lauren Bride. This podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Our coordinating producer is Kate Bars. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps a lot. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.